Hi, I'm VOA's Alexis Strobe with your worldwide news update. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu declared on Tuesday the ceasefire in Gaza would end and the military would resume fighting Hamas until it was defeated if the Palestinian militant group did not release hostages by midday Saturday. Reuters correspondent Freddie Joyner reports.
In light of Hamas's announcement of its decision to violate the agreement and not release our hostages, last night I ordered the military to gather forces inside and around the Gaza Strip. This operation is being carried out at this time. It will be completed in the very near future.
It was not immediately clear if Netanyahu meant Hamas should release all hostages held in Gaza, or just the three who had been expected to be released on Saturday under the ceasefire. His office did not immediately respond to a Reuters request for comment. Hamas has gradually been releasing hostages since the first phase of a ceasefire began on January 19th. But on Monday, the militant group said it would not free any more individuals until further notice, over accusations Israel was violating the deal by conducting several deadly shootings, holding up some aid deliveries, and impeding the return of Gazans to the Strip's north. Israel denies holding back aid and says it has fired on people who disregarded warnings not to approach Israeli troops.
That was Reuters correspondent Freddie Joyner. President Donald Trump said during a press conference on Tuesday that not much was given to Russia in exchange for the release of American schoolteacher Mark Fogel.
Not much. No, they were very nice. We were treated very nicely by Russia, actually. I hope that's the beginning of a relationship where we can end that war. And
Fogel had been detained in Russia since August 2021 and was serving a 14-year sentence. His release comes as Trump seeks to improve relations with Moscow as part of broader efforts to end the war in Ukraine. This is VOA News. Trump's ultimatum to Hamas received a mixed reaction from Israelis, for whom the release of the hostages remains top priority. VOA's Jeff Custer reports.
Hamas spokesman Sami Abu Zuhri said Tuesday Trump needs to remember there is an agreement which must be respected by both parties. Jerusalem resident Haggit Herman told the Reuters news agency she thought Trump's intentions may have been good, but the message was wrong.
I think Trump has good meanings, but I think now he's not on it. I think he must go in another way. I think the most important thing is to get back our people to Israel and not push it and not threaten the Hamas, because that's not the way.
Trump did say that Israel might want to override him regarding his suggestion the ceasefire be canceled, and said he might speak to Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on the issue. Jeff Custer, VOA News.
Canada has named a former deputy commissioner with the Royal Canadian Mounted Police as the country's new fentanyl czar. Officials hope to show the U.S. it is working to prevent production and distribution of the synthetic opioid. Kevin Brousseau has served as an RCMP deputy commissioner and the senior mountie in the province of Manitoba. More recently, he was deputy national security and intelligence advisor to the prime minister. President Donald Trump recently threatened to impose steep tariffs on all goods from Canada, citing the southbound flow of migrants and drugs, including fentanyl. Vice President J.D. Vance warned leaders at a Paris summit against killing the growth of artificial intelligence with excessive regulation. AP correspondent Karen Shamus reports.
Speaking at the summit in Paris, Vice President Vance said,
"We feel very strongly that AI must remain free from ideological bias, and that American AI will not be co-opted into a tool for authoritarian censorship."
He also used his speech to world leaders, tech bosses, and researchers to repeatedly push back against what he called excessive regulation of the rapidly growing AI industry. Concerns over AI's potential dangers have loomed over the summit, particularly as nations grapple with how to regulate a technology that is increasingly entwined with defense and warfare. I'm Karen Shamas.
Iraq's top court has thrown out a legal challenge that had temporarily halted three controversial laws passed last month by the country's parliament. The measures include an amendment to the country's personal status law to give Islamic courts increased authority over family matters, which critics have said would erode women's rights. They also include a general amnesty law that opponents say would allow the release of people involved in public corruption and embezzlement, as well as militants who committed war crimes. The third bill aimed to return lands confiscated from the Kurds under the rule of Saddam Hussein, which some fear would lead to the displacement of Arab residents. That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website. I'm Alexis Strobe, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Wednesday, February 12th, and here are some of the stories we are following. Critics of USAID called for targeted investments in foreign countries.
The simple concept, America first, it doesn't mean you hate anybody else. It means that you have leadership, and President Trump has been very clear about this, that puts the interests of American citizens first.
Gabon courts are at a standstill as widespread protests working conditions. Malawi reinstates a ban on thin plastics after a 9-year legal battle. A new twist emerges in the battle for Speaker of the Liberian House of Representatives. Zambian authorities arrest the daughter of former President Longo.
The Drug Enforcement Commission is working backwards to try and slap Kasila Lungu with a criminal offense of being in possession of property suspected to be proceeds of crime.
And there is optimism as Niger holds a convention on a transition plan to civilian rule. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The Trump administration says it is carrying out a review of foreign aid programs and the main U.S. agency for humanitarian assistance, USAID. Veronica Balderas Iglesias reports on what changes critics of the agency are proposing.
I, Donald John Trump, do solemnly swear.
With his America First approach, U.S. President Donald Trump has promised sweeping changes to how the United States interacts with the rest of the world. Vice President J.D. Vance explained the approach during an interview with Fox News' Hannity show.
The simple concept, America first, it doesn't mean you hate anybody else. It means that you have leadership. And President Trump has been very clear about this, that puts the interests of American citizens first.
In that context, President Trump ordered a 90-day freeze starting January 20th to all foreign assistance pending a government review, with some exceptions, which U.S. Secretary Marco Rubio recently clarified.
We've issued waivers for programs that make all the sense in the world. They make America safer. They make America stronger. If it's providing food or medicine or anything that is saving lives and is immediate and urgent, you're not included in the freeze.
The U.S. Agency for International Development, which manages most of the foreign assistance programs, is under intense scrutiny, which some analysts say is necessary. Brian Clark is a defense policy analyst with the Hudson Institute. He was interviewed via Skype.
There's maybe parts of the U.S. Agency for International Development that might need to be downsized or repurposed to try to refocus them on U.S. national security objectives rather than merely promoting cultural norms that we find to be beneficial and useful here, but that may not be desired by the target country.
Foreign affairs analyst at George Washington University, Sean Roberts, via Skype.
One of the things the Trump administration has been very concerned about is USAID's focus on diversity, equity, and inclusion around the world. I think that has been mishandled to a certain degree by USAID because some countries around the world do not are not ready for accepting, for example, gay marriage.
USAID workers have taken to the streets in recent days to defend their work and reject the potential dismantling of their agency. USAID contractor Mieka would not give her last name.
We work not by forcing people to have respect for America or by telling people to have certain values, but by supporting them in the ways that they feel that they need, and in doing so, making the world a better place for all of us.
More targeted USAID investments in foreign countries could yield better returns, says defense policy expert Brian Clark.
Investments in humanitarian aid, even if they don't necessarily create an ally that's going to be able to support U.S. interests, is good because it promotes U.S. soft power and promotes the U.S. position in the world.
While the review of USAID programs is underway, officials have lifted the suspension on some programs, such as the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, or PEPFAR. But local clinics did not immediately reopen. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
In Zambia, the lawyer for Tasila Longu, the daughter of former President Edgar Longu, has accused the government of conducting a witch hunt. This after authorities arrested her on Tuesday on allegations of possession of properties suspected to be proceeds of crime and money laundering acts, according to the Zambian Drug Enforcement Commission. The agency said Tasia Longu owned a farm valued at $316,000 in eastern Zambia, but her lawyer, Makebe Zulu, says Tasila has told the authorities that the property was purchased for her by her father.
I think the Drug Enforcement Commission are abusing the system. This is a matter that is already in the Superior Court. They started with a non-conviction-based forfeiture proceedings that were in the High Court. And the High Court ordered the forfeiture of the property. However, we appealed that. And following our appeal, there's another judgment by the Court of Appeal. And the Court of Appeal did state in that judgment that you cannot go for non-conviction-based forfeiture of property for a person who is not immune to prosecution or has not absconded from the country so that you have the locus to go for non-conviction-based forfeiture. With that judgment having been passed, the Drug Enforcement Commission is working backwards to try and slap Tasila Longu with a criminal offense of being in possession of property suspected to be proceeds of crime. She did explain to them to say, this property that you are saying I obtained or is suspected to be from proceeds of crime, I did not buy this property. This property was bought for me by my father, and he's available to answer your questions as to where he got the money. Drug Enforcement Commission says, well, we are not satisfied with your answer. We are going ahead to charge you with this offense. Now, this has turned out to be a witch hunt against the family.
So what are the options available to you and to Ms. Longu?
We have to wait for them to take the matter to court. The other arrests were done over a year ago. They've not gone to court. It's now for the DPP to decide whether or not they're going to prosecute those matters. But in all this, in a properly functioning system, it wouldn't even see the light of day in court. It wouldn't even go to an extent of an arrest.
You mentioned witch hunt earlier this year, I think it was last month, the opposition Patriotic Front accused the government of harassing the opposition. The government denied that. I know I spoke with the information minister who said that such allegations were dirty and harmful to the progress that the Zambian government is making. Now, how is a witch hunting?
The Minister of Information is actually the Minister of Misinformation because he has never been factual about anything. See, the first thing that they embarked on was to ensure that President Longu was not on the ballot. They did all they can and through lawfare managed to get a judgment that seemingly supported them. This is a judgment that was contrary to four previous judgments that said that he was eligible. They have managed to get a judgment that says he's not eligible, notwithstanding that he was eligible in 2021. It defies all logic. Now they have embarked on a campaign because they know that he still has influence, to reduce his influence. And it seems like the card that they are playing is that to reduce his influence, they're trying to portray to the public that he was corrupt, that he did things that benefited his family alone. But it's very easy to see through their intentions. No one can take that story because now they've embarked on trying to reduce his influence. But the more they do it, the more that his influence increases.
Makebe Zulu is the lawyer for Tasila Longu, the daughter of former Zambian President Edgar Longu. He was speaking with me from the capital, Lusaka. Gabon authorities say the country's magistrate courts are effectively closed because the officials who run them refuse to work due to poor working conditions and pay. The angry magistrates are rejecting pleas by Gabon's leaders to return to work while waiting for conditions to improve. Moki Edwin Kizika reports from neighboring Cameroon.
Civilians say hundreds of people seeking justice have not been served by the courts all over Gabon for close to a month now. Courts in Gabon traditionally handle cases including land disputes, marriage disputes, divorce, labor disputes and inheritance and criminal offenses. The court also authenticate documents and establish certificates of non-conviction for civilians who want to either have national identity cards or run for public office. 31-year-old shopkeeper Narcisse Eboku says he has visited the court at the administrative center in Gabon's capital, Libreville, 5 times within the past 10 days to apply for a certificate of non-conviction, but no one has attended to him.
La situation malencontreuse.
He says he is very surprised that Gabon's government is allowing law courts and institutions which ensure the protection of human rights and freedoms to be paralyzed for about a month. Eboko spoke to VOA via a messaging app from Libreville on Tuesday. Magistrates in Gabon launched their protest on January 13, saying that they want an immediate application of the general status of their profession, which gives financial and material advantages to guarantee their independence. Gabon's National Trade Union of Magistrates, or SINAMAC, says it is surprised there has been no concrete response from the Central African States government on if there are plans to improve the magistrates' working conditions, even as activities have been paralyzed in courts all over Gabon. Landry Abaga Esonu is SINAMAC's president. Esono says the National Trade Union of Magistrates launched protests because Gabon's government refused to improve working conditions of magistrates and declined all calls for dialogue. Paul-Marie Gunjot is Gabon's justice minister. He says claims that Gabon's government is reluctant to solve problems the magistrates submitted to the government are unfounded. Gunjot says Gabon's current financial difficulties make it impossible to raise the colossal $40 million needed to immediately solve the problems presented by magistrates. He says the government is, however, looking for a way to satisfy what he calls some immediate needs of magistrates. Gunjot spoke on State TV Monday. Moki Edwin Kinzuka, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, February 12. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. In Liberia, the battle for the speakership of the House of Representatives took a new twist on Tuesday. The group claiming to be the majority bloc ransacked the office of Embattled Speaker J. Fonati Kofa to make way for new Speaker Richard Kung. The House of Representatives has been divided into two groups since last year. Speaker Kofa, who is accused of conflict of interest, has refused to step down on grounds that his removal is illegal. Representative Musa Hasambiliti is a member of the so-called Rule of Law Caucus, which supports Speaker Kofa. He tells me that the ransacking of the Speaker's office is an attack on the rule of law and democracy in Liberia.
It's lawlessness. It has no basis. I think, Jim, you know that it is now clear after one of the justices of the Supreme Court spoke on Monday that the Supreme Court decision was that the action of the so-called majority bloc was illegal and that whatever they do were not on any legal basis. So while we await the court to clarify this, we stand and maintain our position that there is no new speaker and we still have Speaker Kofa. With no order from the court, these same people acting in the same ultra-violent manner have gone and taken their naked quest for power to another level, and they have vandalized or desecrated the office of the third highest president in the republic. And the sad part is that we do not see any reaction from the executive.
But as you said, Speaker Kofa, according to the majority, is no longer the speaker.
We have the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court has signified that all actions of the so-called majority are illegal. I'm sure Bernardi have the audio tape of one of the justices who was speaking to the position of the entire bench. So the court has spoken, and they have restated that to one of their on that position is that any action the majority took without a certain speaker who is duly elected is illegal. So they don't have the authority. They're taking the law in their own hands, and this is dangerous for our democracy. This is a new law for our governance system. We have to, as Liberia, look at this as an attack on democracy.
As I was saying, they are saying they had to do what they did to make room for the new speaker of the majority bloc.
He is not the speaker. He is not the speaker. He has not been elected speaker. The current speaker has not been removed. And so their actions are dangerous, are counterproductive to our governing system. And I hope that the executive will start aiding and building these people so that they can come to their senses. And then the legislature, the House of Representatives, can sit in one place and try to resolve this issue.
So tell me, what is going to happen now? Can this majority bloc go ahead and conduct the business of the House of Representatives without you?
The court has just reiterated through one of the justices that their actions are illegal. The cornerstone of our democracy is rule of law. They are representative today because we have rule of law. Therefore, we all have to respect the rule of law.
Representative Musa Hassan Baliti is a member of the so-called Rule of Law Caucus at the Liberian House of Representatives. He was speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia. Niger is set to hold a national convention to map out its long-awaited political transition following the July 2023 coup that deposed President Mohamed Bazoum. Junta leader General Abdourahmane Chiani says the dialogue will be inclusive, set governance priorities, and determine the transition timeline. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
Niger's military announced on state television last Saturday that the national convention will take place from February the 15th to the 19th. Authorities say the meeting is expected to produce a preliminary draft of the transition charter. Junta leader General Abdourahmane Chiani had initially committed to a three-year transition after seizing power from President Mohamed Bazoum in July 2023. But months of silence on the issue filled uncertainty among Nigerians and international observers. Ibrahim Farouk, program coordinator for the African division at YEAGA Africa, says the convention is a step in the right direction.
I think why this is important is that democratic stability in the West African sub-region has the area of creating a ripple effect. We saw how once there were coups and attempted coups in some of these countries, it caused a ripple effect. But beyond just a return to democratic governments, it must also provide the promise of development that comes with democracy as well.
Ahead of the convention, authorities held consultations across Niger's eight regions and formed a national commission to oversee the dialogue. At the end of the meeting, the commission is expected to submit a final report to Chiani within 3 weeks. The July 2023 coup triggered widespread condemnation, including threats of military intervention from the Regional Economic Community of West African States, or ECOWAS. Niger's political crisis reflects a broader trend in the Sahel, where military takeovers have become more frequent amid escalating jihadist threats and growing resentment towards civilian governments. Farouk believes Niger could set a positive example.
Mali, the Republic of Niger, and Burkina Faso, we have witnessed unconstitutional changes of government. And I think one common thread that has been running through these three countries is that there hasn't been an adherence to previously agreed transition timelines. But I hope that with this step in the Republic of Niger, it would signal to their brothers in Mali and in Burkina Faso that indeed there is an importance to return back to a democratically elected government.
Mali and Burkina Faso, both under military rule, have extended their transition timelines despite initially pledging a quicker return to democracy. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
The Malawi government has announced the immediate implementation of a ban on the production, importation, use, and export of thin plastic of less than 60 microns. The decision comes 9 years after legal battles with manufacturing companies that resisted the ban. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Environment experts say thin plastics take a long time to degrade, and therefore they contaminate soil for a long time when buried. However, Malawi banned the use of thin plastics in March 2015 in response to global concerns around the environmental damage from thin plastics. However, a series of court injunctions secured by the country's plastics manufacturers delayed its implementation. The plastics manufacturers, mainly business people of Indian origin, argued that the ban would negatively impact local communities, industry, and the economy. They argued that the government should instead collaborate with the Plastics Manufacturers Association to address plastic waste management. However, in his ruling last week, High Court Judge Howard Pemba removed the injunctions. Judge Pemba also dismissed an appeal from the plastic manufacturers for a judicial review on the matter, saying such successful actions on the same issue were an abuse of the court process. Yusuf Nkungula is the Principal Secretary for Natural Resources and Climate Change in Malawi. He told reporters Monday that the court's verdict means the ban on thin plastics stands and its implementation is with immediate effect. Nkungula said those violating the ban will face law, as stated in regulations against thin plastics.
First of all, people can be in prison between maybe 3 months and upwards, based on the severity of the offense. And secondly, the regulations also provide for confiscation of any equipment that is used for producing, manufacturing, distribution, and even the use of thin plastics.
Malawi has long struggled with plastic pollution. A 2019 policy brief by the United Nations Development Programme estimated that the country produces at least 75,000 tons of plastic annually, with 80% being single-use and non-recyclable. Environmental activists in Malawi have long complained that plastics are frequently discarded in household rubbish pits and dumped in landfills, clogging gutters on roadsides and cluttering rivers in urban centers. Wilfred Chadewa is the director of the Malawi Environment Protection Authority. He says efforts are underway to educate people on the ban and that using thin plastics is now an offense.
We use different types of media, the print and electronic media. We also work with educational institutions. We work with community groups to pass on the message on what has happened with regards to the law and what the expectation is.
Kadewa says people should now start using alternatives like paper bags and other carriers. However, Principal Secretary Nkungula says the government will soon conduct nationwide inspections to ensure compliance with the ban. For VOA Africa, I am Lamek Masina in Blantyre.
And that's it for this Wednesday, February 12th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for coming on board with us this morning. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Barton in Washington, saying, have a lovely day.